You're about to go through the unknown. And so we're keeping you safe by helping you take the best preparation, the most precautions, so that you can be as optimized as possible for whatever experience you're going to have. This was designed to be a bridge as an introduction to the plant medicine world, as opposed to like, we're going to come drink ayahuasca, or this is part of the psychedelic renaissance. It's more of a holistic introduction to the tradition and to the pharmacy of the jungle. So that's why we're having plant medicine treatments and having some restrictions that typically go around deeper initiations with these plants. For example, at a regular retreat, certain things would be optional that are not optional at our retreat. Like, for example, our retreat has silence built in instead of just when we're not processing and doing sharing circles, everybody's just hanging out. We're keeping a more focused container inward reflection and connecting with nature, but it's not as extreme as a dieta in which you're not even allowed to make eye contact. Like you are really completely in your own psychic space. So this is meant to be a bridge to deeper plant medicine work while also allowing more space for connection because, you know, your first ayahuasca experience should not be a dieta. So this is kind of like a more like higher level entry into ayahuasca. Like if you went to a regular Soltar retreat, they would highly recommend that you don't be on your phone. And we are taking away everybody's phones. Not that there's anything wrong with having your phone. Some people, it's not an option. They have a sick parent and they need to keep in touch, and that's fine. You know, it's not a judgment thing. It's just not the container that we're holding for this retreat. And also, at a regular retreat, you could opt to surrender your phone, and people do, but you can't control what everybody else is doing. We have obviously in this retreat an emphasis on integration and preparation. And for that process on both sides of the active medicine in-person retreat experience, but we always encourage people to start therapy now. You know, if there was someone that you were thinking about working with as support to begin that relationship now, because it can be really helpful for them to know you before this experience. If someone was thinking about working with someone to support their medicine work, or if they didn't have a therapist and were thinking about getting a therapist and were thinking about waiting until after the retreat to start that process, we actually encourage it before because it can be really powerful and helpful for this person to know you before the retreat, to witness your transformation, and to support whatever came up for you from the retreat, as opposed to meeting you post-retreat and picking things up from there. There are different tools for grounding and centering and connecting to the different parts of the self. So we ask people to sit with what has worked for them in the past. We also have found, in particular, that journaling has been fruitful for people, if only because 6 months from now, people have found it very helpful to look back when they were at particular parts of their process. So, journaling from those with experience seems to be one of the most useful tools that people use. We want you to be aware that it could benefit you to be mindful of who you share the fact that you're planning to do an ayahuasca retreat. You don't know what's going to happen in the space, you don't know how you're going to feel after. You may feel great and want to tell everybody, but in that case, you then have the option to tell people, so this is what I was doing for that week while I was away. You may be in process still. The plant medicine may have you leave the retreat with some homework, and you may want that personal space to be processing it without people in your life asking you, how was the retreat? So we're asking present you to consider future you. And in our experience, we found that there's always the option of telling people when you get back, but you can't really put it back in the box once it's out. So telling people who are necessary, if somebody, if you have a pet or something like that, or you have your emergency contact, obviously you will want them to know how to contact the center, but maybe not tell anyone who's not necessary. The only other note in terms of notifying people is if you are working with practitioners or have a particular network of support, close friends who you share your medicine work with, your medicine journeys or your healing work, it could be helpful to let those people know what you're doing so that when you get back, they are aware and you don't have to necessarily explain, oh man, I just got back from an ayahuasca retreat. So think about people in your life and consider whether or not it's helpful for them to know now, or if it's more helpful maybe to let them know if you feel like it when you get back. But if you're working with a therapist or some medical health support person, it could be helpful to give them a heads up so that when you come back, you already have laid out that groundwork. So in this process, what we are doing is we are moving away from human consciousness toward the plants. For someone who has not yet done ayahuasca, that can be a very mysterious statement. And even for those of us who have, it's still really mysterious, but the plants are a little bit closer to some truths, and they have a little bit of a cleaner connection in many ways because they don't have egos. I mean, it is a very complicated thing to inhabit a human body. And so what we are attempting to do is the opposite of AI. We are moving away from artificial intelligence and moving into natural intelligence. Working with another species is such a privilege. We are human, and so the world kind of revolves around our humanness for us to conduct our lives. But we're not just entering the world of the plants. We are being invited into the visionary plant spirit space. We're entering the cycle of the plants. For many of us, we think of food as, you know, you grow it, you eat it, then you use the fertilizer. But when you're able to kind of step away from us being the center of things, we see a reciprocity. You know, we are also food for the plants. Our physical materials decompose, our bones are made of calcium and all the other good stuff. And so working with another species gives us the opportunity to understand our own human cycle within a much greater cycle in which we are not the starring role. And that can be really humbling and really wondrous and magical and daunting. With this dieta and with this work, we're trying to get to a more aligned baseline to our true essence. And so in our daily lives, with our usual habits, we tend to lean, we tend to distract from our discomfort. So in a similar way as an elimination diet works, what we're doing is we're clearing out the distractions that we put into our bodies that impact our energy, and in many ways often compensate for misalignments. And so by removing these stimulants, by these creature comforts that we have, both behaviorally in our mental and emotional, psychological, energetic space, but also physically, so that we can more accurately and authentically inhabit our bodies. And this can cause discomfort. I liken it to if someone has a rash and has been using steroid cream to manage the rash. But if they have a doctor's appointment, you may not want to use that because you want the rash to be doing its thing so that the doctor can clearly see your symptoms. And so what we're trying to do is so many of these things that we use, sugar, caffeine, doom scrolling on Instagram, all of that, you know, these are often salves for some inner discomfort. And so when we come to the healers, we want them to be able to see clearly what's going on inside of us. And also from our perspective, we don't want those energies to be in their usual MO with all of their momentum, because it will help us in surrendering, in connecting as well. This is a time when we're going through a transition. And in any transition, we have the ability to notice. And noticing and awareness is the name of the game in this work. Everything that we're doing in the dieta isn't just preparation to go drink medicine, but it's also going to serve you when you're in the medicine space as well. Depending on your age, I think of it as like the Karate Kid, where, you know, right now we're waxing cars and painting fences. And then when you get into ceremony, many things will click about why you've been doing this and where it all fits in to the ceremonies themselves. When we give things up, certain things may happen. Memories can come up. We may be aware of certain dynamics in our interpersonal relationships. Emotions may come up. Certain things often, you know, when people give things up, will move into the dream space. And so we're also becoming aware of our different states of consciousness as well. And a lot of the medicine work is learning how to work in that space. So this is an opportunity as your physiology is changing, as your habits are changing, as you're moving into a quieter space where you're more alone with yourself. This is an opportunity to notice. And we're not asking anyone to necessarily do anything. We're such a doer culture. We're really learning how to be with ourselves. And if a painful emotion arises, we're learning how to be present with it and sit with it rather than turn to the usual distractions or eating something that makes it all feel better. We're really learning to be with it. And because that can be difficult, we're also learning how to sit with ourselves in compassion. For most of us, it's very easy to be compassionate for others and recognize their suffering. But in this process, we're really learning to do it for ourselves. And that is often the medicine that needs to accompany the truth in order for us to embody it, because the truth can be a tough pill to swallow. So in the sense that the food that we're eating can be bland or a non-stimulant, energetically, mentally, we're also moving into that space as well, so that the body can enter a more meditative state. The plants work with us on a very, very subtle level. And many of us are very desensitized because our society is very loud. There's always white noise. And the foods that we eat often are a sort of nutrient deficient white noise. And so by clearing this out, the body's allowed to get quiet. We're encouraging people to meditate for the mind to get quiet, because underneath the blaring noise of the modern world, the plants are whispering. Think about shock. When people go into shock, like, that's a really extreme version of leaving your body. When you lose awareness of your physical state to where you can't even feel what's going on inside of you. When somebody is really stimulated to the point where they're not in control of their processes, can be viewed as a disembodiment. And so if somebody cuts you off in traffic or, you know, does something that really frustrates you, again, we can have that reaction because in a way they controlled our emotional state. They push a button that makes the monkey go, hey, you jerk, or whatever it is. And so again, we have this opportunity to create a space saying, how do I want to respond to this? Am I going to let this guy ruin my day? Often in fear, this is what happens too, is at least from the shamanic standpoint, we leave our bodies because our bodies are very uncomfortable to be in. And so that's another way that we use distraction is, you know, oh, I've got a stomach ache or my leg hurts. And so I'm going to kind of just zone out, right? I'm going to check out. And people use all kinds of things. They use alcohol. They use, you know, you can use really anything. You can use exercise. You can use any sort of distraction. And so it's like these things aren't necessarily bad in and of themselves, but we're learning how to do this consciously. We're learning how to remain aware of our bodies rather than, they call it in psychology, absorption. I do it when I read. When I read, like, the house could be burning down and I'd have no idea because I'm like, just, I'm in the book. And this can happen with trauma. With trauma, if we're feeling threatened, we are locked in. And sometimes that's appropriate. It's appropriate to be in survival mode when your survival is literally at risk. The problem is that for many of us, in the way trauma works, is that once the threat has left, we stay in that mode. And so when we are feeling deep emotions or stress or overwhelmed, to bring our awareness back to the breath, to notice how we're feeling in our bodies, and not to lose our awareness that we are embodied while we are also experiencing these other mental and emotional states. We have constructed these huge architectural feats of the mind to manage our emotions. We've created very deep stories. And many stories have been handed down to us. They're not even our stories, but we're living them. What we aim to do, again, is to notice those stories, to notice how our minds react to things rather than being our minds and identifying as the reaction. We have suppressed a lot of emotions You know, when you watch a dog and there's a thunderstorm and it's scared, it shakes immediately. It doesn't hold on to it. And we have held so much in our bodies, and we're preparing them so that people who are highly skilled can help us process them out. One of the reasons that we're trying to relax the mind is so that we can surrender preconceived notions. Much of the most difficult things to surrender in this work is our minds, our beliefs. They do completely create a fortress around our egos, just this protective masks and layers that we've built to protect our baseline, our essence of who we really are. And so this dieta process is all about letting those things arise, learning to hold our own space, not to suppress and find ways that we might want to express them in a healthy way. But again, it doesn't have to be about doing anything. It can just be about being able to sit with it, the way a parent sits with a child. One thing that we learn as well is when certain traumas or certain energies that no longer serve us are cleared, there's a space that's created. And that space is really what we're working with here. That space is the difference between reaction and conscious response. A reaction is a conditioning, again, from the past. A response is that part of us that's able to watch ourselves and observe ourselves and choose. And we may choose to respond the way that we have in the past because it worked, but it's because we've considered it and we've checked in with ourselves that this is in alignment for us in the moment. We are in the process of becoming empowered. Much of what we're doing is to become aware of our physical state. Notice when you're in your body and when you're not. Often when we're uncomfortable, we leave our bodies, and that's where our minds can have so much activity because we're not in our bodies, and so all the energy moves up. But we're trying to notice again the subtleties. We're noticing sensations. We're noticing any particular parts of our bodies that feel constricted, and noticing when that happens, what that part of the body is reacting to. We're noticing if there's shifts in temperature, if different parts of our body are aligned with a certain emotion or memory. We're looking for a lot of different connections here. And again, that's why so much is about noticing. And you can't notice unless there is at least just a little bit of space between our typical reactions and the stimulus. With this dieta, in breaking from our usual habits, our usual daily unconscious reactions to the structure of our lives and our inner worlds, the changes to our diets, and what we're literally putting into our bodies to animate us. This is all creating an opportunity for us to stop and notice space. And that space can also be very uncomfortable. There can be a tendency to want to fill it right away, but to learn to be in that space so that we can consciously choose whether or not we want it to be filled. And if we do want something to occupy that space, we are choosing what occupies that space and how much of it. And we are doing that in alignment with our true selves, or what is closer to our truer selves than how we've been managing it previously. As you watch your thoughts, particularly in the present, you might also notice that patterns come up. And again, compassion is so crucial in this process because it's the antidote to judgment. There can be a lot of shame in the healing process because shame can be an emotional component to learning. Learning requires that we aren't perfect to begin with. It requires that there was something that wasn't working for us that needs to change. And so we can feel ashamed of our past selves for that thing that we didn't know. That we didn't know. And so compassion is our friend through this process. Compassion says, man, this is amazing that you had the courage to see this, that you're able to have compassion for that past self who didn't know this because there wasn't the guide there to teach them or to show them and reflect this for them. And to have compassion for that past self because life was very hard because of this. And again, to really honor your own work that not only do you have the courage to see it, but you also have the courage to work to change it because you want a better life for yourself and others because you're committed to this path of healing. And this is all part of good parenting. This is part of the process of learning how to reparent ourselves. And so you are your ally, compassion is your ally, and we are your allies in this process.